Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. A tremendous Tuesday to you. All right, lots to get to coming off the championship game last night and a lot more to look into. Let's get this thing. We're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, you know that Rocket can. All right, so let me set you up with a telephone number. You know what it is by now. It is toll-free. It is wide open. We start off with two open segments, 1-800-636-8686. Follow me on Twitter. In fact, all social media at Jim Rome, R-O-M-E. And I'm still banging emails, incredibly enough. Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. The three interviews today look like this. Pat 40 is joining me at 40 past hour number one. In fact, we'll go back-to-back. Since I open up the second segment for you, we often go back-to-back. 9:40, Pat 40, 10 o'clock Pacific, Rick Carlisle. And then in hour number three, another NFL draft prospect. I'm trying to run through as many as I possibly can. Before the draft itself, Osa Odighizuwa joins me. And that's coming up in the final segment of today's program. Once again, use the phone, 1-800-636-8686. Let's start with last night's game. Now, the question coming out of Saturday night was, could the national championship game be even better than UCLA-Gonzaga had been? Certainly, that was a big ask, even more so once that game started, because within the first 2 minutes of last night, it was pretty clear that the answer was not just no, it was hell no. Because that was one of the most comprehensive and thorough beatdowns that I've seen in a long, long time. A complete hospital job, a total curb stomping, the likes that you never really ever see in a championship game. Like, Baylor didn't just come out and punch Gonzaga in the mouth. They cold cocked them. They shattered their face. And the Zags never did recover. They never really were in the game. Not really. And everybody knew it from the very jump.
Gives it right back to Flo Thamba. Thamba inside, dumps it down low to Vital. Vital misses the first, gets his rebound, gets another rebound off a second miss, and throws it back out to Davion Mitchell. Third opportunity as Mitchell dribbles to the right elbow. Jumper up and down for Davion Mitchell. 2-0. Baylor with a lead.
Can't give either of these teams extra possessions.
Westwood won on the call, and you knew from that very first possession it was going to be a very long night for Gonzaga. And then they follow that up with another offensive board on the next possession, and then a three, and then a layup, and before you know it, it's 9-0. Before Baylor knew it, it was 9-0. Before Gonzaga knew it, it was 9-0. And at that time, you might have wondered why Mark Few didn't call a timeout to stop that run. In hindsight, I'm not sure it would have mattered. I'm not sure anything that Few did or didn't do would have mattered last night. Because last night was merely a continuation of Saturday night, and in the worst way for Gonzaga. Because Baylor picked up right where they left off in that beatdown of Houston, and Gonzaga looked like they hadn't slept since beating UCLA. I mean, Baylor, from the jump, was so explosive, so aggressive, they were so sharp, and they were fresh. They looked like they could have gone another 40 after that game ended. Meanwhile, Gonzaga looked like they were gassed from the very first minute. They did not look like they had played 45 minutes of intense ball on Saturday. They looked like they had played it Monday afternoon right before they tipped last night. So Baylor dominated them for it. The Zags could not make a shot deep. Baylor couldn't miss. And when they did miss, they just got their own rebounds. That was a big, big difference last night. Baylor, monsters on the offensive glass and killers in getting out and defending the perimeter. Gonzaga could not do a damn thing. Baylor did the damn thing, and they did it all damn night. Again, they knew Gonzaga was gassed. So they wrapped both their hands around their throats, and they choked them the hell out. At one point in the first half, it was 29-10 in the national championship game against an undefeated Gonzaga team looking to make history. I mean, you just know somewhere Mercury Morris was popping champagne at that point. Just because. Listen, Baylor deserves all the credit in the world for what they did last night. That was as impressive a beatdown as you're ever going to see in a national championship game. And the really wild thing to me is, it was not that long ago that these guys were still trying to find themselves. It was not that long ago that they were trailing Villanova by 7 at halftime of the Sweet 16. Jared Butler, who couldn't miss in a Final Four, barely made a third of his shots in the first four tournament games, and he was even worse from deep. But when it mattered most, against Houston and Gonzaga, he knocked in nearly 60% of his threes, and some of them were even coming from Steph Curry range.
Mitchell spinning into the paint. Nowhere to go with it. Backs it out now to Jared Butler. Butler against Kispert. Six to shoot. Three. Top of the key. It's good! Jared Butler with the three. Everything Baylor throws toward the rim seemingly is going in.
Pretty much. And when you see that guy hitting shots like that, and then the juice that he was providing on defense and offense, it's no surprise that he was the most outstanding player of the Final Four. But as good as Butler was, I have no problem if they had given it to Davion Mitchell, if he had been MOP. Butler was a walking bucket. Mitchell was a walking clamp. He didn't put up as many points as Butler, but he had 16 assists in the Final Four. He was lights out on defense. And if you want somebody who sums up Baylor's defensive attitude and mindset, it's Mitchell. And one more thing that's really important to discuss. Do not for a second disrespect Baylor or Gonzaga by coming up in here and saying that the Zags were overrated, or by coming up in here and talking junk about Gonzaga. That is a damn good team. A damn good Gonzaga team with multiple NBA players on their roster, including a guy who's a likely top five pick in the next few months. They were the number one team in the country from preseason until last night. And I don't want to hear about their conference either. They beat Kansas. They beat West Virginia. They beat Iowa. They beat Virginia. They beat five straight teams in the tournament, and most of them never even laid a hand on the Zags. Until Baylor. Because that's how good Baylor is. So if you want to come in here and you want to take a run at Gonzaga or Mark Few, man, just keep moving. Keep moving. I've got no time for that today or tomorrow or really ever. Last night was not about Gonzaga not being good or being overrated or playing in a bullcrap conference. No, what that is a bullcrap attempt to get somebody to look at you. It's not about that. It's about how good Baylor was. Dumping on Gonzaga is disrespecting Baylor. Don't do it, because Gonzaga did not get exposed last night. They did what Houston did two nights earlier. They ran into a bleeping buzzsaw. Baylor led Houston by 25 at halftime. They were up by 19 on the Zags in the first half. They're just that good. Baylor is just that good. It's not a case of Houston and Gonzaga being that bad. It's a case of Baylor being that good. So, the issue is not that people overrated Gonzaga. It's that people underrated Baylor badly. Because as much respect as everybody gave them before that game, it still was not nearly enough. And they ripped a ton more last night. And the fact is about Baylor, had they not gone on that pause midseason, we'd probably be talking about them being the first undefeated champion since 76 instead of the Zags, and talking them up as a potential generational team. Hell yes, Baylor fans were lighting bleep on fire in Waco. I see them working. They had a hell of a lot to celebrate and a hell of a lot to burn after the season they just had. I mean, myself, I almost went gaucho style and burned a couch on their behalf. That's how impressive Baylor was last night.
And the Baylor Bears do indeed bear down to knock off the unbeaten Gonzaga Bulldogs and claim the school's first men's basketball championship.
Extremely impressive on both ends with their energy, their aggression, their length. Really impressive. Let's get some reaction in here quickly. Chris, no longer in St. Pete, tweets, Baylor made Gonzaga look like a bunch of old, gassed out chumps trying to throw elbows at the Y Saturday mornings. Yeah, that's fair. I would allow that. They did. They did. And you knew it right from the very jump. Dear West Coast, boom. Out of here.
Boom.
Side Baylor. Scott in San Antonio, non-crier. It's a lot of that, and there's not much I can say about that either, other than it's right. It's true. They were that good last night. Gonzaga, tell me how my ass tastes. Regards, Baylor. JP in Riverside, War Angels fan, throwing trash cans on the field at the Houston Astros. I will get to that as well. They were lobbing debris onto the field. And by debris, I mean trash cans. Rome, Zags sought perfection, and they certainly found it, just not on their side. Jack from Grand Rapids, right? We knew that there was going to be a juggernaut last night. We just picked the wrong juggernaut. Hey, Rome, congrats to Baylor on winning the national championship. Question, though, who was that Division III team that they were playing? What did I just say, Lee? What did I just say about coming up in here and saying that Gonzaga was overrated? They played a bullcrap conference and they got exposed. None of it's true. I'm not saying it's the best conference. Far from it. But that's not why they got beaten down last night. You want to know why they got beat down last night?
Far from it.
Because Baylor is better. Baylor is really good. Really deep. Really athletic. Really aggressive. Really tough. And they play tremendous defense. And they've got three unbelievable guards. And they've got a really good bench. And a kooky but really good coach. Boy, how about Scott Drew's act afterwards, man? That was almost worth the price of admission. Hey, Jim. Baylor just couldn't stop hitting the threes last night. Signed, Mark Grace. Go ahead, Alvin. Play that. Nah, don't.
Slump busters.
Mike in Buffalo on War Guys who swirl the finger in a circle when it's time for another round of beers. All right, now let's run that back. Let's run that back, Mikey. Dear Jim, I know last night was a disappointing end for our fans, but we will be back next season and ready again to take on St. Mary's, Pepperdine, and Pacific. Overratingly yours, Mark Few, too many quality opponents. Brian in Charlotte. War Elk getting loose in the podcast with more stories of Monty eating custard, mate. You've already heard that story. You've already heard that story a number of times. I can't keep retelling the same stories. We can't keep playing the hits. Listen, and did you not hear what I just said about Gonzaga and their schedule? They beat a number of powers. They beat some of the best in the business. They went out of conference and they beat a number of powers, and then they ripped off five straight in the tournament. Romy, Gonzaga sucks. They are so overrated. Wow, you won a bunch of games in a row. Good job, tough guy. If I see Mark Few, I'm going to spray him in the face with a can of mace. Regards, Cal Ripken caller.
I heard you talking about Cal Ripken and his stupid overrated record. Cal Ripken sucks. He's overrated. He was overpaid. He did nothing good. He's average player at best who had a crappy record because he didn't play that hard. And so everybody thinks he's so great. Wow, he played a bunch of games in a row. Good job there, tough guy. I would pay $1 million just so I could spray that guy in the face with a full mace spray.
Would you really? If you even had $1 million, is that what you would use it on? Geoff and Lincoln, reset that. Hey, Geoff, mace is not spelled M-A-S-S. That's mass. Good try, though. Oh, so close, Geoff. Mass. Quote, if I see Mark Few, I would spray him in the face with a can of mass. Oh, the old mass spray. Hey, Gonzaga. Who do you think you are? I am. Signed, Baylor.
Yes! That is right, I did it! That's another five! Are you kidding me? That's right! Who do you think you are? I am! Damn it right!
Who do you think you are? I am! Damn it right!
Damn it right!
How great would that have been if Scott Drew looked at Jim Nance last night and said, "Who do you think you are? I am! Damn it right!
Damn it right!"
So you are more than welcome to comment on what you saw last night, but don't come in here and make it all about how bad and how overrated Gonzaga is. They were just outclassed. They got beat by a better team. They got beat by a better team. And like I said, had they not paused, they probably, because they came out of that pause and they were not right, had they not paused, we'd probably be talking about Baylor as the undefeated team, the generational team, not Gonzaga. They were next level. All right, in addition to that, and this guy sets me up for it, dear Rome, sex is undefeated. Thanks, Paul Pierce. he'd probably argue that sex is, poker is. I know Instagram Live is. Instagram Live kicked his ass. And sure enough, the mouse ain't having it. He's already been fired. He's already been fired, but he seems to think the whole thing is pretty amusing. So I've got the update on Paul Pierce. We had that story yesterday about how he was, quote, wilding on Friday night on IG Live. And now he doesn't have a job. Also, I want to talk about Aaron Rodgers on Jeopardy. Fernando Tatis coming out of his cleats. Big cut. And he dislocated his shoulder partially in the process. We will get to that, Padre fan. North Carolina already has their man. It's in the family. It's Hubert Davis. Some of you are questioning that hire. I like it a lot myself. Sam Darnold gets a new opportunity. The Jets move him. So now we know the answer to their quarterback question. We know pretty much who they're going to take with the second pick. And Sam Darnold gets the hell out of New York, which is good for him. And I'll have that for you too. And somebody brought it up. Angel fan did get loose. And if you're the Angels, I kind of like that. You've got LA, you've got San Diego, you've got the Angels in between. It's all about the Dodgers and the Padres. Nice to see Angel fan inserting himself and or herself into the conversation by lobbing trash cans onto the field against the Astros. Normally, I do not condone ever throwing anything on the field unless it's a trash can against the Astros. An inflatable trash can. Should have just drove one of those giant green trash trucks onto the field. Dragged the infield with it. 1-800-636-8686. Use the telephone number. Don't wait for your beef day. Don't wait for the smack off. Best calls go right to the front and they get on the air. Pat 40 at 40 past. Rick Carlisle at the top of hour number two. So that's why you want to call right now. When you call a Dell Technologies advisor, you are speaking to somebody who's not just there waiting for their turn to speak, but somebody who actually wants to hear what you have to say. They're focused on you. They're ready to give advice on everything from laptops to the cloud and offer tailored solutions powered by Intel vPro platform to keep your small business ready for what's next. Our advisors listen so you know your small business needs have been heard. Call a Dell Technologies advisor right now at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
This weekend on CBS, the big events continue as the best golfers in the world head to Augusta National. In hopes of winning the coveted green jacket, it is a tradition unlike any other. The Masters coverage gets underway Saturday at 3 Eastern, continues Sunday at 2 Eastern, 11 Pacific on CBS. Anxious to see that. Elk is going to be my guest tomorrow on the Jim Rome podcast. Carl tweets, War Angel Jim getting loose last night. It was not me. I was not at the game. I was not the one that dragged a trash can or blew up a trash can and then dropped it on the field. I wish. I would love to take credit for that, but Angel Jim was not the one dropping trash on the field. Angel Jim was at home watching that beatdown last night. Romy, even we thought Gonzaga handled that loss poorly. Regards, adults crying at work. Ashley in Nebraska. Man, Ashley, easy. Got a kid like, and I'm going to say kid. He's a freshman in college. Jalen Suggs wanted that badly, took that hard. Knows that's probably the last time he's going to play with those guys. His last college game. I could see where these guys get worked up. I could see where guys shed tears, either in victory or defeat. Now, quote, crying at work. Adults crying at work. That's different. If there are tears of joy, I might allow that. But if you're crying at work for anything that happened at work, that's not acceptable. Unless you're a construction worker and you smashed your thumb with a hammer or something like that. Or you got your arm caught in some combine. Otherwise, adults cannot cry at work for any reason. It's just not professional. I'm sorry. short of getting a telephone call that something truly horrific has happened to somebody that's very close to you, you cannot cry at work. Where I'm drawing the line is you can't cry when things don't go well at work. Believe me, things go badly for me at work every single day. Have you ever seen me cry on this show? Maybe a couple of times I've gotten a little dusty talking to a guest who had an amazing story or something I heard. And even then I kept it together. But I've never cried because of adversity in the workplace. And believe me, I've had my share. Believe me, I have my share every freaking day reading your tweets and going through your phone calls. Never once shed a tear. Ashley, that's different than some young athletes going down and shedding tears in defeat. I will allow that. That's not an adult crying at work. Anybody else? All right, so two of the worst kept secrets in football are this. The Jets want to get rid of Sam Darnold. The Panthers want a quarterback. So what happens? The Jets trade Darnold to the Panthers. You know, that was one of those, hey, you got your peanut butter and my chocolate moments. Like, there was no way that was not going to happen, right? The Jets end up sending Darnold to Carolina for a sixth in this year's draft and a second and a fourth in next year's draft, which all points to a third very open secret. The Jets are going to select Zach Wilson with that second pick in the draft. And there are a number of different ways that you can look at this. Number one, tip your cap to the Jets because the trade completes an amazing streak. They've now traded away six straight first-round picks. Six. I mean, that is awesome. That is so terrible. That's incredible. That really is outstanding. They have dealt away six consecutive first-round picks. Nothing but respect for that organization stepping up to the plate every single year and missing on finding guys who are either good or want to stay around. Because it's always one of those two things. They either can't pick the right guy, or if they pick the right guy, that guy wants nothing to do with them. Some of those picks were bad, and New York wanted to get rid of them, and some of them were good, and they wanted to get rid of the Jets. And while it'd be very easy to clown them for missing on yet another first-round pick, I do want to say that I'm actually impressed that Joe Douglas got something in return. They managed to get three picks, including a second-round pick, for a player that everybody knew they had to move. So for Douglas, that's actually pretty solid work. I mean, it only matters if they actually get usable players with those picks, but at least they've given themselves a shot. Now, if I were to rank the winners and losers in this deal, why don't we start with the winners? The biggest winner is Sam Darnold, and it's not even close. Number one, he's getting away from the Jets. Number two, he's going to the Panthers and will instantly walk into a situation where he's got the best offense coordinator that he's ever worked with and the most weapons he's ever had in his NFL career. And number three, he's getting away from the Jets. Can't imagine the scar tissue this dude has after how his career started in New York and then the last 2 years in particular. No wonder Darnold and his crew were partying yesterday and having a little get-together with black and teal balloons. I'm talking about a guy who had to endure 2 years with Adam Gase. Now he gets to go hang out with Joe Brady and Matt Rhule. Man, I'd blow up some balloons and slam some expensive booze too if I were him. The other fascinating thing about the deal is what it means for the Panthers. Number one, pretty clear they're not sold on Teddy Bridgewater, nor are they in love with that contract they gave him last season. And I've said this before, I'll say it again right now, and I'll say it again later on. The trades this year have proven yet again, the NFL, more than anything else, is a quarterback's league. Either you have one or you don't. It's that black and white. It's that simple. It is a quarterback's league. Either you have one or you don't. If you've got a quarterback, you've got a shot. If you don't, you better be doing everything in your power to try to get one. And that's what the Panthers have been doing for months now. That's why they tried to make a deal for Matthew Stafford, but came up short. That's why they've been jonesing so hard to get Deshaun Watson. But that's certainly not going to happen now. The trade for Darnold also means that they did not like their chances of getting a quarterback that they wanted with the eighth pick. Not after San Francisco traded up to the three spot. The Niners trading up that spot is further proof it doesn't matter how much talent you have on your roster. If you do not have a quarterback you believe in, and clearly the Niners didn't in Jimmy G, it just doesn't matter. So now the Panthers go with Darnold. And while Darnold is not Stafford or Watson or Trevor Lawrence or Zach Wilson even, he could still be something. It's hard to evaluate Darnold given the complete and utter garbage that he had with the Jets. Like, how much of that is on Darnold? How much of that was on Gase? How much of that was on the Jets being the Jets? Does a trip down to Carolina and the chance to wash the stink of the Jets off of him change anything? Or maybe does it change everything? The Panthers obviously think it will. Honestly, I could see it happening. I could see this going really well for Darnold. Why would I say that? I don't know. Look what happened to Ryan Tannehill when he got away from Adam Gase. He went from being a bust to a Pro Bowl quarterback. Now, I'm not saying that Sam Darnold is a Pro Bowler in waiting, but I would definitely say that we have not seen the best of him. There's something else there. There's potential there that the Jets were never able to get out of him, and the Panthers are guessing that they can. Again, I'm not going to guarantee this guy's a Pro Bowler, but I can guarantee you this. I'd much rather be the Panthers with Sam Darnold than the Bears with Andy Dalton. At least you have some hope with Darnold. Bottom line, can they unlock his potential? Well, if you had to pick a coaching staff to do it, Carolina's would be right near the top of the list. And if the Panthers can do that, they've got their quarterback of the future. And if they can't, they just continue their search. To me, Darnold is a huge winner. I mean, how bad was it with the Jets? My man was seeing ghosts during games.
Seeing ghosts.
Right. You know what that was, Sam? That ghost? That ghost was your head coach draining your soul. You know, Adam Gase, friendly ghost, the friendliest ghost you know. Brain not very bright, won't put up a fight. Adam Gase, the friendly ghost. How do you like that? You want me to run that back? Too bad. You better have heard it the first time. Adam Gase, the friendly ghost. The friendliest ghost you know. Brain not bright. I would not give up on Darnold just yet. But I see why he was partying so hard. All right, when we come back, still phone lines were open. But I'm going to talk to Pat Forty. Get his thoughts on what he saw last night and what that means for both schools going forward. Pat Forty joins me next. Top of the hour, Rick Carlisle, the head coach of the Dallas Mavericks, is back in. But before I do anything else, it is time.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome. Once again, top of hour number two, or in about 20 minutes from right now, a conversation with Dallas Mavericks head coach Rick Carlisle. But as promised, joining us to break down last night's championship game. You've already got my point of view. Let's get somebody else's. A senior writer for Sports Illustrated, recipient of 18 national awards from the Associated Press Sports Editor. He is the co-host of the Yahoo Sports College Podcast, a panelist on my daily TV show back in the day. He is Pat Forty. Pat, great to have you back. How are you, Pat?
Hey, Jim. Good to be with you again.
Great to have you here, Pat. So take me back, Pat, to before the actual demolition started last night, before opening tip, what kind of expectations did you have for what we were going to get from Gonzaga and Baylor?
I was fully expecting a great game, super competitive, you know, probably down to the wire, two teams that had been, you know, dominant all season, and boy, did that not play out. It was just pretty shocking that from the absolute first possession onward, Baylor was just way better, much more intense, much more aggressive, probably had much more in the tank after Saturday, physically tougher, faster, more athletic, better coach, everything. I mean, it was an amazing mismatch, and it became, you know, pretty evident after like 3 minutes when Jalen Suggs got his second foul and it was 9-0. You're like, oh boy, this thing is headed towards a beatdown status.
Pat Forty joining us. Pat, I agree with you. I mean, they dominated literally every single matchup, every single aspect of that game. What about the foul trouble that Suggs got into? I'm not sure that would have made a difference anyway, but how costly was that for Gonzaga that he picked up that second foul so quickly?
I think it was very costly, especially, you know, he had really, he's their special talent and their best athlete by far, and you take him out and the athletic mismatch becomes more pronounced on the perimeter, you know, with Davion Mitchell and Jared Butler and Flagler and Teague. I mean, the guards for Baylor are just so fast and tough and, you know, just they're great players. And you take the one guy out who can match the athleticism and the toughness, and that was an immediate sign that Gonzaga was in for a long night.
Pat Forty is joining us once again. Yeah, Pat, I have to say that watching them attack the offensive glass the way they did and defend the perimeter the way they did, you knew that Gonzaga was in some really, really deep trouble. If you had to pick, Pat, what was more impressive to you about Baylor's performance, their offense or their defense?
Oh, boy. You know, I would say probably their defense, just because Gonzaga had been such a brilliant offensive team and they took away so much from them. You know, the pick and roll game that had been so devastating, you know, what they carved up USC with and several other teams, they took that away. I mean, Timmy was overmatched and he had, you know, Drew Timmy had a great tournament, but if I were him, I would walk away from this saying, I need 5 months in the weight room because I'm not strong enough to handle, you know, the kind of guys that you would see in the NBA or again in college. And, you know, they pushed him around. They shut down the guard play. And again, Suggs being out of there for most of a lot of the first half, I think was a major issue. So I give Baylor a lot of credit. They had him scouted really well. They were prepared and they were relentless. And it was really interesting, Jim, that before the game, the Baylor staff watched Gonzaga's warm-ups as close as I've ever seen them watch a coaching staff watch the other team. Like, they watched every shot, every movement. You know, I don't know whether they were looking for injuries or susceptibilities or what, but, like, they were as locked in as I've ever seen on an opponent.
We're talking to Pat Forty. So, Pat, what about Baylor then? In terms of that, I mean, you pointed this out. They're the first team since the Lou Alcindor UCLA teams to win both games of the Final Four by at least 15 points. What does that tell you about how good and how dominant this crew is?
Yeah, you know what? I have to acknowledge a small error there. But Villanova did it as well in 2018. So they're the second team in the last 53 years to do that. But still, that's rare territory. And yeah, I mean, when really the tell was there on Saturday, you know, that Baylor did to Houston what they ultimately did to Gonzaga, that they were really ready to play their best basketball. And at the same time, Gonzaga was, you know, life and death to beat a number 11 seed UCLA. That if you just watched those two games, you had to walk away saying, oh my gosh, Baylor's playing at a much higher level. So they did. And they, you know, Scott Drew said afterwards, usually you have to get lucky somewhere along the way to win a title. They never did. They won every game handily.
Didn't have to. Pat Forty joining us, a senior writer for Sports Illustrated. So, Pat, what about Scott Drew? For instance, he has been criticized or was for cheating in the past, for crashing out of the NCAA tournament way too early. Now that he's won an NCAA championship, how would you describe his reputation among other coaches and around the sport right now?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. It has definitely evolved, and I think this is the final evolution. You know, there was criticism of him for some of the recruiting tactics. I think he was over-aggressive early in his career and learned from some of the mistakes. I mean, he got publicly bashed by Rick Barnes and Bobby Knight and some other people, and I think he cleaned up that part of things. And then, yeah, the question was his coaching. I mean, you know, he used to rely on his zone, and his teams weren't very good man-to-man, and they just would be susceptible to these inexplicable flops in the tournament, and that's all long gone. You know, I mean, they've got guys now, they need no gimmicks, they need no tricks. He has put together great teams 2 years in a row. Last year they may have won it if there was a tournament then, too. And I think this stamps Scott Drew is an absolutely elite coach.
No doubt. Pat Forte joining us. So, Pat, of course, there is a rush in by some to try to discredit Gonzaga and what they did. I would argue that they beat four top 20 teams in their first seven games this year. They went undefeated in the regular season, the conference tournament. They beat a Big 12 team. They beat two Pac-12 teams in the NCAA tournament. So easy if you want to take a run at them. I think that's just it's lame. It's not a good take. In your mind, how good was this Gonzaga group this year?
Yeah, no, I mean, look, you don't get to 31-0, you know, by being overrated. I mean, they had a phenomenal season. As you said, early on, they were blasting teams from the power conferences. And then in the tournament, they were blasting everybody until they got to UCLA. So they were an excellent team. Mark Few will win a national title. It's just a matter of when. He's going to keep recruiting better and better players, and they're going to be there. You know, you just keep knocking on the door. Eventually it opens. Phil Mickelson, you know, people, oh, he's never going to win a major. Well, not once he wins one, he wins five. I mean, I would not be shocked if Mark Few ends up with multiple national titles. And he's certainly going to win one. So I'm not buying that criticism. The only thing that I would say that just watching last night, maybe the quality of big men that they had faced throughout this tournament and physicality of the big men and in the West Coast Conference was not what they saw against Baylor. Like Drew Timmy was way too soft and casual. And, he got knocked around. He didn't get rebounds. And I think that's the kind of thing where if you spend a season playing in the West Coast Conference, maybe there is a reality check at the end.
I think that's fair. That was a physical beatdown. Baylor is so physical. They're so aggressive. Pat, before you go, the shot that Jalen Suggs hit to beat UCLA and send Gonzaga into the championship game was absolutely legendary, a legendary end to a legendary game. Does it lose any of its luster because of how last night went, or is that going to always be special?
Well, I think it'll definitely always be special, no doubt about it. I mean, you know, that's one of those games that people will talk about. Oh, where were you when it happened? And, you know, what was your reaction for a long, long time? It does probably, in retrospect, take it down a notch. Like, you know, when Leitner made his shot, well, it wasn't the end of the season. They had to win two more games, but they did win them. So that Duke team won a national championship and needed that shot to get to the championship. Chris Jenkins' shot for Villanova 5 years ago was for the national championship. This shot, while just, you know, I mean, the last sequence and the other sequences in that game was so phenomenal, and I think we'll always remember them, but maybe now after not just losing but getting hammered in that championship game, it does take just a tiny bit of the shine off.
Pat Forte, my guest. One last thought, Pat, if you don't mind. The other piece of news in college basketball, Hubert Davis named head coach of North Carolina. Of course, they keep it within family. How do you like that fit for him and for them?
I think it's total wait and see. You know, I can't say it's a bad hire because we don't know. Can't say it's a good hire because we don't know. We have not seen Hubert Davis as a head coach at any level, so was he sitting there learning from Roy Williams, who was one of the all-time greats? Yes. But was he also part of the staff that led to some underachieving here the last two seasons? Yes. So, you know, I think just kind of repeating what had been going on doesn't necessarily prove that you can fix anything. He's got some proving to do here to show that he can get North Carolina back to where it was in 2017 and earlier as opposed to where it is right now. This is Carolina. I'm not surprised they kept it within the family, but eventually you got to go outside the family. Maybe this would have been the time to do it. I think there would have been some people really interested in the job, but you weren't going to get a Brad Stevens. You weren't going to get a Billy Donovan. You weren't going to get Jay Wright. You weren't going to get Mark Few. So, you know, if you weren't going to get the absolute grand slam, maybe this is what you do and just see how it works.
He is a senior writer for Sports Illustrated and, again, the recipient of 18 national awards from the Associated Press sports editor. And you can listen to him as the co-host of the Yahoo Sports College podcast. Pat Forte, my guest. Pat, thanks so much. Great job as always, and always good to have you on the show.
Hey, my pleasure, Jim. Good to talk to you again.
My man, Pat Forte, one of the best journos in our business. Love talking to Pat. 1-800-636-8686. So where do you come out on any of that? I happen to agree with pretty much everything he said. They were just outclassed, outplayed, out-hustled, out everything. There was not a single matchup on the floor last night, either amongst the players or the coaches or otherwise, that Baylor did not dominate. Not one single matchup. They were that much better. They simply were that much better. But don't come up in here looking to discredit Gonzaga or Mark Few or the conference they play in. Them, they ran into a buzzsaw. They got beat by a better team. It doesn't mean they're not a great team. I think Gonzaga is a great team. They got beat by an even better team. And as I mentioned, if not for that pause, if they didn't pause for COVID-19, I think we're talking about Baylor being undefeated. And we're talking about Baylor being the first team in nearly five decades to work that trick. I mean, you saw them last night. They are that good, that physical, that aggressive, that tenacious, that dominant on both ends of the floor. I've got Rick Carlisle coming up next segment. Quickly, dear Angel fans, why are you throwing perfectly good houses onto the field? Regard bums. Richard in Chicago. Hey, Ricky, let me help you with something. Signing something regards bums qualifies as bum smack, right? You sent me something from a bum. Actually, plural, bums. That right there is bum smack. There aren't very many rules on this program. Have a take, don't suck, don't self-gloss, and no bum smack. And that literally is it. And personal appearance is not show fodder. It's a really easy program. Don't self-gloss, have a take, don't suck, personal appearance is not show fodder, and no bum smack. I'm asking you to pay attention to four or five rules. Am I asking you for too much, Ricky? Regards bums? I'm going to say it one last time, really, for the last time ever in the history of this program. If you come in here and you make fun of somebody who is homeless or, quote, a bum, you almost assuredly will become a, quote, bum yourself. It's just bad karma, man. That's the way the universe works. You yourself will be living in that same trash can, Ricky, if you're not careful. When we come back, Rick Carlisle joins me. That's next. Stay tuned. You're in the jungle. Hour number two, straight ahead.